keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the Inquiry Sessions. Welcome to another edition of the Inquiry Sessions on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alastair Harding, and today on the Inquiry Sessions, we have with us Randall Richards and Roy Chantelou. And the reason we have Randall and Roy with us is because before our enforced fundraising break for Reality Check Radio, you may have heard Paul Brennan talking to Randall Richards on The Breakfast Show about his attendance at the Truth and Lies speaking event in Wanaka on Saturday the 6th of April 2024. It was only a short interview, though, and it left many of us wanting to hear more, amongst them myself. So that's the reason I'm doing a longer interview today and adding Roy into the mix, because he was there as well. The Truth and Lies event was fascinating because it represented an opportunity to hear what many of us might term the other side of the story. For all of us, the COVID era was a time of fear. For many, it was the fear of the COVID virus. And for the rest of us, it was the fear of what New Zealand was becoming. Because if you were in the second group and you dared to speak out against the fear of the virus or the vaccines, you were given labels like conspiracy theorist or anti-vaxxer, fringe minority, or even extremists. And at one infamous time, we were also the river of filth. All for bringing up such radical subjects as our Bill of Rights and our right to refuse medical treatment. And so the Truth and Lies event was fascinating because it was an opportunity to hear from the very people who cast those labels about with such wild abandon. The panel was moderated by Radio New Zealand journalist Catherine Ryan, and it consisted of three people who were front and centre in the media during the COVID era. They were Susie Wiles, Susie Ferguson, and Byron Clark. Kate Hanna of the Disinformation Project was also supposed to be there, but was a no-show. And what followed was actually recorded and can be heard in that leaked recording that is now doing the rounds of the internet. But for us today to talk about it, we'll be talking to Randall and Roy, who were there, to hear what was said in our attempt to understand all sides of the story. So, welcome, Randall.
Thanks, Alistair.
And welcome, Roy.
Pleasure. Good morning, Alistair.
Okay, so my first question is for you, Randall. What was this event? Was it a standalone event, or was it was it part of something a little bit bigger?
It was part of something bigger called the Festival of Color, which they have on a regular basis in Wanaka, and of that is Aspiring Conversations, which is a sub activity, and they have the idea is to inspire conversation, build community. Challenge fostering community. I'm just reading some of their vision statement. Discussions and interactive events. We aim to encourage community, captivate individuals of all walks of life, to spark conversations, challenge perceptions, and connect people. Yeah, so that's their vision.
Okay, so in the context of all of this, it does sound like it's a good opportunity for everyone to get together and debrief the whole COVID era, perhaps.
Yeah, if it's both sides. But the thing that stuck to my craw is that it says all walks of life, which means different, diverse perspectives and such. And also, I just want to finish. It says to connect people, to stimulate dialogue on critical issues, encouraging reflection and exploration of new ideas, encouraging personal growth, cultural understanding and social cohesion.
Well, Randall, that's just such a joke there. You just read out to challenge perceptions and to stimulate dialogue. As you and I know, mate, nothing could have been further from the quote truth. It was just a totally controlled narrative. The whole thing was so controlled.
Speaking of that then, Roy, bringing you into the conversation, how many of you got together to go to this? And what have you been seeing going on in New Zealand that made you decide that you wanted to go and hear these people speak?
Well, in terms of what's been going on in New Zealand, as we know, Alistair, you as much as anybody, it's just this controlled narrative that is tragically, it's brainwashing our people, and it's not open dialogue and it's not two-sided. So, of course, over the last 4 years, with the whole COVID narrative and everything, and then hearing that there was going to be this woman that I'd listened to that was positioned as an expert and an authority through the TV One news, that I've got friends and family who would say, well, you know, what she's saying is right. I thought, wow, this is an opportunity for me to go along and have a listen. In terms of how many, I was just aware of half a dozen people. But I thought, being over the hill in Arrowtown, yep, I'll just drive over the hill and spend an hour on a Saturday afternoon watching with my own eyes, listening with my own ears what was coming out. And when we arrived, Alistair, I've just got to say, it was kind of surreal. There was a police presence. So there were uniformed police. I believe there was an undercover cop. He looked like a detective was there as well. I could be wrong on that, but police cars. And I'm like, and the security as you entered the building, coats, bags, everything being taken off people. It was just surreal, the security.
Can I interject something about what my wife observed? I was busy kind of getting ready for the thing. But my wife observed all the police, and she went up to ask somebody, one of the organizers, why are there so many police? And she said that Susie Wiles had a death threat. So I think people were on edge. I don't know if they meant a death threat in general or not for that day, but also my wife got up to leave. She couldn't deal with it anymore. She couldn't stomach it. So when she got up to leave, her eyes were on her in the audience. There was a full, you know, I don't know what, 500 people or 300 anyway. But they just watched, you know, the security, everybody just watched her, because I don't know what they were expecting. But you could feel it was tense, as in addition to.
There was fear-mongering. And Susie has proven time and time again, particularly with the case against her employer, Auckland University, in the courts. She loves grandstanding about how she's been victimized and poor me. People are saying unkind things about me. It's mental, given what she's been saying. So in terms of what was driving the police detail and all the security, yes, it would have been Susie doing that. And she took the opportunity when she was speaking up the front to go on about how she's had death threats and rape threats and all, quite peculiar.
And what about the overall feeling within the audience? How many people were there, and what sort of people were there, and what was the feeling amongst them?
Well, they were generally my age or older, I'd say, generally, and it's hard to, you know, just the feeling I had was that they were all drunk the Kool-Aid, and were kind of following the narrative. That was just a general feeling as we sat down with people in the audience.
Yeah, it was definitely an older crew, sort of, you know, sort of retirees, and a lot of grey hair and a lot of no hair. But the real scary thing was, as Randall just said, without a question, they seemed to be adoring fans of listening to these people up the front saying, don't listen to alternative media unless it's an accredited agency, unless it complies with the Broadcasting Standards Authority.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around and I'm going, oh my goodness, these people are just loving this, that we can't listen to something that's non-official.
And how many people were there? I understand it was sold out. How many people does that mean?
What do you think, Roy? Probably 300 at least?
Yeah, probably around about 300.
It was packed. It was the upper balcony was full as well.
Okay, so there's obviously an appetite in New Zealand for this kind of information.
Well, what we want to do is, we had a little chat group, a strategy group started, and prior to this thing, but we're keeping it going because I think we should start a festival of truth, you know, just to take the piss out of them and just have the chairs and the glasses of water on the table and the whole thing, and, you know, see what kind of appetite we can get for that, for actual truth.
Okay, so the content. First of all, Kate Hanna was a no-show from the Disinformation Project. That's a shame because I would have loved to have heard some of her explanations for all of this. But overall, I've listened to the recording that's doing the rounds around the internet, and it actually seems to me that a lot of what they're talking about were the same things that a lot of people on the other side of the equation talk about. They were fearful. They feel victimized. They feel like they're being silenced. I found that quite interesting, that they're being silenced when they're the ones being amplified in the media. But they seem to truly believe that, that they were being silenced.
Yeah, to me, Alistair, it is this inversion of the truth. They, you know, as we know, there can be the misinformation and disinformation that is amplified through the mainstream media. It's very controlled narrative. And without a question, what, in my opinion, what this was all about was absolutely reinforcing to that audience that we will be your single source of truth, and you should only listen to the stuff that we're saying, because we are the truth. The stuff that the alternative media like RCR and Joe Rogan and all the rest of it, that they were absolutely discrediting it, incredibly discrediting it. Just Alistair, if I can, just one other little point that is worth noting. When we sat down, there was a very strict instruction that there would be no recording, no filming. You would be asked to leave by security. So I look around, I'm sitting right in the middle, I look around and I notice that there is security everywhere. And when the panelists came out, Susie came out with this, not a little black mask, a huge black mask over her face. And I thought, oh my God, this is some kind of a joke. And it's obviously a little prop that she's going to use to say, hey, remember when there was COVID and we had to wear masks? But unbelievably, she wore that mask for the entire 1 hour session. So she's sitting up the front, away from anybody, just three people around her, with a black mask on. And I thought, oh my God, this is theater. This is just being so orchestrated to again do the whole fear thing. And you better look at me and remember we've got an invisible enemy that we're still fighting. Yeah. Quite remarkable.
She made it quite clear also that if there was any disturbance from the audience, you would be escorted out by security. That was one of the ground rules.
So once the conversation got underway, when I do listen to that recording that is doing the rounds around the internet at the moment, I hear Catherine Ryan, the moderator, consistently saying that we should respect all views. Do you feel like they were actually listening to all views? It seemed to me that they were talking more about that you should only listen to the mainstream media news and discard everything else.
100%, Alistair. They very specifically targeted Telegram and Facebook and YouTube and other places where one can get information. And they were absolutely positioning it. It's got to be the sort of official thing through recognized media channels. It was quite incredibly overt. In terms of any sort of discussion or dialogue or conversation, it was crystal clear from the outset that there would be no dialogue entered into. It would only be their opinion. And they were going to tell it to the people, to those 300 people sitting there who'd paid to go and listen to what they had to say. And I understand that about 2 days before the actual event, they sent out an email to all the ticket holders saying there won't be any open Q&A, but if you want to ask a question, please email it in and we will address it. Well, guess what? Of course, there was zero questions.
We decided as a group to submit 10 questions to them. They were quite simplified, and I put them in my article. And they weren't. There might have been a hint or two. I think Catherine's got somewhat of an open door to truth. I don't think she's completely. I think there's some potential there.
One of the interesting things that I noticed straight away, and Roy, you just mentioned Telegram. They put a big focus on Telegram there during the talk. And one of the things that I noticed from this was that they were framing it as some sort of massive conspiracy, which I found rather ironic that they call people who oppose their points of views as conspiracy theorists. Yet they paint it as some sort of grand conspiracy to dominate attention using Telegram and to bring people into other ideas. They talk about how people are bought into into these conspiracy theorist movements by thinking about something very benign, and then they get transitioned into various other nefarious ideas as they go through the Telegram funnel, so to speak. And Byron Clark at one point said, and I quote, "It's all designed to keep you watching as long as you can." Isn't that just a perfect description of what any TV channel or any media does anywhere around the world, or newspapers, any social media outlet? It's all about eyeballs, and it's all about getting people to think about different things. It just seems to me that perhaps what their real problem is here is the message, the information, the narrative is what they're interested in. If Telegram was promoting what they were promoting, then there wouldn't be a problem.
100%. The truth is inverted. So what they were saying, particularly Byron, now that you mention it, he talked about at the very front, they were framing it up with what is disinformation, what is misinformation. And his little checklist was Russia, China, Ukraine, climate change, vaccine, 5G. And then he went on to say, and these people actually believe in that there's these nefarious organizations, or that these organizations are bad. And he went on to quote World Health Organization, United Nations, and World Economic Forum. It was incredible. It was like a whole checklist of, yep, all these questions that have been asked, and we've got question marks over the behavior and motivations of these organizations and these events, global events. And he was just trying to shut the whole thing, all of those things down immediately, as being conspiracy theorists watching too much Telegram and listening to nutters on YouTube. It was just amazing.
So the message is we're only supposed to listen to the mainstream media, is that correct?
Yep, which the audience that was there, you could see they were lapping it up. They were just loving it. That's what they wanted to hear. Because, you know, it's crazy. It's almost like a cult thing. They are obviously very secure, very comfortable in their group of people that they're going to hang on for grim death by their fingernails to, yes, we are being told the truth by the media and these people who are presenting this truth and lies thing. And if anybody says anything against it, they are conspiracy theorists. That was the whole tone and manner. Would that be right, Randall?
It's straight out of Orwell. You know, Tucker Carlson had a recent interview with a guy that wrote a book called The Indoctrinated Mind. Fascinating interview that really puts it squarely that there's a reason that people are behaving the way they are, that, you know, they are indoctrinated. And we kind of make fun, say, they drink the Kool-Aid, but in a way, it's like, you know, two different species in a way.
But in the interests of attempting to find some common ground so that we can at least start conversations with people on that side of the argument, was there anything that you did agree with the panel on?
Can I just say what just a very strong feeling of, I came in there getting ready to hate people. I'd never seen these people in person before. And seeing them on stage, they kind of came out, and you could tell they weren't on top of their game. Just, you know, energetically, they weren't taking care of themselves physically. They didn't look great, and they didn't feel great. My son, 12-year-old, even picked up on it and said, I don't think they'd fit in with our open-minded group too much. So I had a hard time hating them, and I had an overall urge to want to connect with them, either on the record or off the record. Not that I would try and change their mind, but just to, you know, not dehumanize them, I guess. And I think that's the only way forward, is to see we are all one, you know. I know that sounds namby-pamby, but that was a big impression I had being in that audience. But having said that, I think that they need to suffer the consequences of their behaviors. So whether that's legal or whatever, you know, well, it would be legal, of course, but, you know, the truth will come out, so.
Alistair, in terms of, you know, was there anything they said that I agreed with? Sadly, it was so incredibly one-sided, and it was all framed almost to be aggressive against anybody who challenged what it was all about. So Susie Wiles went back into talking about the pandemic and all the maths deaths that there were globally and how lucky we were in New Zealand that we had the masks and all the vaccines and how they've saved all these lives and everything. And I'm looking at these people that are that they're virtually applauding this rhetoric of we got it right and thank goodness we did all that. I mean, kind of scary when you think of the implications for the upcoming international health regulation amendments and all the rest of it in terms of what could or would happen next time. But in terms of how I feel about those people, there's a lovely old boy there who's a member of Arrowtown Golf Club, and I saw him there. We didn't have any dialogue. Really, really nice guy. And all these people seem really lovely people. And my heart goes out, and I just think, oh, my goodness, this military-grade psyops, you know, psychological warfare, all this propaganda that we've been listening to has worked so remarkably well. It's quite incredible. And then to see that it is still ongoing with a little pocket group like this doing a thing called Truth and Lies, and it is just hammering home the same stuff. So, you know, did I agree with anything they said? Sadly not, because there was just so much nonsense, absolute nonsense.
But you've both touched on a point there, which is really interesting, that there is actually empathy for them. That someone like Byron Clark, he wrote a book and it's literally titled Fear. This seems to be the overriding theme of all of this. I listened to Susie Wiles during the recording. She paints herself as a victim. She says early on that at Auckland University, where she works, there was another person, an epidemiologist, I think I know who she's talking about,
yeah,
who took a contrary, she says he took a contrary opinion. He got a big social media following and even employed a PR company who apparently opposed gun control. So she said that shows you what kind of people she was up against.
Yeah,
she paints herself as the small battler, essentially, fighting against this tidal wave of disinformation. That's not how I remember it. I remember her being on TV every day. I remember her winning New Zealander of the Year and being celebrated. I don't really see her as a victim, but that's how she sees herself.
Well, that's important to keep in mind. That's exactly why I have empathy for these folks, because they do see themselves. It's like getting mad at somebody for having the flu, no pun intended, or, you know, having a cold. It's really hard for me to get mad at them. But I do think we need to be firm with our boundaries.
And Susie did touch on this, you know, the free speech thing and the Bill of Rights Act and what have you got mentioned. But I just about fell over in my chair when Susie, I forget the exact words, but the words were to the effect that maybe some people don't have the right to free speech. So her opinion, and she articulated it to all these people, if you don't agree with what we say, or if you're not listening to the right people, the recognized and acknowledged experts, in inverted commas, and, you know, we know what we've just been through, where all the experts couldn't have been more wrong and what happened. But the fact that Susie Wiles is sitting up the front and she's actually articulating that some people do not have the right to free speech was just extraordinary.
If I could just interject there, Roy, and actually I've written down the quote of what she said at that point, so I'll read it out here. She said, what we've ended up seeing is this kind of, you know, people are kind of saying, I need to have my right to say whatever I want to say, versus actually, we don't have to listen to you. We don't have to platform you. And actually, do you have that right? If what you're saying is not based on evidence and it's actually leading to harm somebody, maybe you don't have the right to say what you want to say if that right is going to lead someone to being killed.
Wow. Wow.
That's the part that I wrote down that I found that was very interesting, because it shows her mindset, that she thinks that she's preventing, by stopping people's free speech, that she's stopping people being killed. I would say that perhaps there would be plenty of people that could counter that argument with a discussion about the dangers of the vaccines. And therefore, how would she like it if the narrative or the international conversation on these vaccines actually flips when people start talking about the dangers of it? People like Rory Nairn, who actually did die from taking the vaccine. And what she was saying led directly to his death. So therefore, I wonder what she will think when her words are flipped on her.
I don't think she'll ever see it. Sorry, Randall, but Alistair, I think that's a really good summary. And you know, of course, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm having a flashback to Jacinda Ardern telling us, you know, on national news, face to camera, we will be your single source of truth. So she's in exactly that same camp. And as you say, the biggest issue here is, yes, the lies that have been told have led to many deaths. But Susie, I'm convinced no matter how much information or truthful facts and evidence, all these peer-reviewed studies, reports, as you say, it is all coming out now. But I don't think she has the mental capacity to ever grasp it. It's just too hard. It's a bridge too far.
Or is she grasping it, and that's one of the reasons why she wears the mask, because she's actually feeling fearful at the moment?
Correct. 100%.
Yeah. Right. If you don't mind, I'd like to finish just add a little bit more to what she said. And is that all right?
Yeah.
Alistair? She said, and that's sort of where, that's what, you know, legislation's all about. And she says, where's the intersection between free speech and hate speech? And the free speech absolutist would say, it doesn't matter. We should have absolutely the right to say whatever we want. And I disagree, she said. I think as a member of society, we have a responsibility to each other. And that should trump she used the word trump, whatever they want to say. That, and the audience, people in the audience. But,
the question is that at the moment, she's on the right side of that discussion. I wonder whether she would feel the same way if she was on the wrong side of that discussion.
Exactly.
Who decides what is hate speech? At the moment, she's the one deciding it. And of course, it's very comfortable for her in that position.
Roy, I got a question for you. You know, she's victimized, and he wrote his book on fear, you know, Clark did. There is probably some element out there that are, you know, genuinely racist or they promote violence and all that. But yeah, the general, I think the vast majority of us that are, you know, are law-abiding citizens. But do you have any observations or any comments?
I don't know, Randall. I guess I'd say, of course, there are some very unkind people out there who will call people names, you know, in a very derogatory, inappropriate way and what have you. But what you just read out there to me, in addition to what Alistair read out, and you know, I was sitting there and I heard it, you're reminding me of the craziness of, yes, we will decide what's hate speech and what isn't. And it was just loaded with, there needs to be an authority, and it's probably me and people like me, this is Susie saying this, I'm just ad-libbing this, but in terms of, we will control the speech. And when we think of where Jacinda's gone to and what she's doing now, and with this whole global thing about the hate speech legislation and the notion of bringing that in, you know, I mean, that to me is a really terrifying thing in the context of freedom of speech and people just not being hypnotized through a mainstream channel. It's
Byron Clark also weighed in at that point, and he said he felt that he was harassed and threatened with violence. And I quote, he said, "And while I feel like they talk a lot about free speech, they were trying to silence me, trying to put my life at risk because of the things I've written." And I think that that that's a free speech issue that's been ignored, that people are being silenced through the threat of violence. My memory of the whole situation was that a lot of us felt very silenced. We were ridiculed. We had epithets used against us. We were labeled as a fringe minority and conspiracy theorists and so on. And this was all led by the media, by people like Susie Wiles and Byron Clark and all these people that were actually on this panel. But he talks about this threat of violence. Is that real? Or is he just having trouble seeing both sides of the story here?
That's a good question. Is it real? Did he actually have those threats? You know, we can't answer that. That's why I kind of brought that up, but I feel like I'm almost drinking the Kool-Aid by even bringing it up, because, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, it's a lot, so much of it's orchestrated.
I never saw anything like that, to be honest with you. And I was within, I mean, there were a lot of angry people, yeah, but they had every right to be angry. They had lost their jobs. They'd lost their businesses. They'd been ostracized from society. So there were a lot of angry people. Mm. But personally, what I saw was actually the opposite. I was one day when I was at the Wellington protests, I was standing in the middle of the road filming the Beehive, and a bus pulled up in front of me, and the bus driver leaned out the window with his mask on, and he leaned out and he said, "I hope you all get COVID and die." I mean, does that constitute a death threat in this world of these truth and lies people?
Good point, Alistair.
But Byron Clark, in my opinion, he has no real comprehension of the threats that have been made against us. And I too was in Wellington, and I said to people, you can cut the air with a knife in terms of the love and the camaraderie and the unity. And we were all there because we were being threatened. We were literally being threatened with vaccine mandates, with all this control thing. So, yep, Byron went on to say, he said words to the effect of, and you'll have this quote, the people who were down there protesting against a vaccine mandate should have been protesting against a more worthy cause. I mean, can you believe that? There was a more worthy cause than us saying, hey, guys, we're the ones that have got death threats. And when somebody's coming at you with an experimental gene therapy and punishing you for not taking it, That's a threat.
Okay, so here we are. We're doing this series for Reality Check Radio, the Inquiry Sessions. It's based on trying to figure out what happened through dialogue. What value did this bring to the conversation? We did learn something out of this, did we not?
Well, we sure did. I think just seeing the people in person, and it is what it is. They're behaving as they are, and it just brings back, whether it's the 100th monkey, whatever, I still think there's a lot of hope. I think there's a lot of hope that people can just flip, you know, that all it takes is, as Penny Marie says, there's a lot of avenues, a lot of gateways to the truth. And there's different levels of how people come into it, come into the truth. So, and I love Mark, it's attributed to Mark Twain that a lie gets halfway around the world before truth gets a chance to put its pants on.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I think, sadly, there's, you know, and this has been suggested for over the last 4 years, there are 30% of the people, you know, roughly, that will just never, ever get it. They just do not have the ability, and they're not programmed, and they've been that hypnotized through all the repeated messages that they're just not going to get it. The great thing is, I call it the wobbly middle, that we do have a big wobbly middle, that are beginning to wake up, and with all the evidence coming out, and sadly, tragically, people having family and friends who have all of a sudden died or got really sick, and they are connecting it to the jab, those are the people that are going to wake up, but some people will just never get to, but that's okay.
On that note, let's leave it there. Thank you so much, Randall and Roy, for joining me this morning and explaining that. It's a really fascinating insight into this discussion and where it's actually going as well. And so thank you for going along on Saturday, and thanks for reporting back to us all on what went on.
Thanks, Alistair. That was a really nice interview. Thank you.
Cheers, Alistair.
The RCR Inquiry Sessions. Unpacking the COVID response for an honest inquiry.